The topic right now for this portion of Vocal Point is reparations. Our guest is Bob Woodson. I'm Jerry Newcomb. And again, this is Vocal Point. Bob, it is great to have you back on the program. You used to be involved in the civil rights movement. You went on to found the Woodson Center. You've also the leading charge person in the whole 1776 Unites to respond against the 1619 Project. We've dealt with that in the past. But right now, let's talk about reparations. There are some who are saying, okay, because America enslaved African Americans way back when, we now need to pay back the ancestors of those slaves. Let's talk about that. What are your thoughts?
Well, I just think it's a distraction that it gets complicated. It happened so many years ago. The question that I have is a practical one. What about the 5,000 slaves that were owned by the five civilized tribes of Native Americans? And they had those slaves on their own Trail of Tears. What about the free blacks that owned slaves? Do the sons and daughters of their survivors pay reparations? What about the whites who never owned slaves and gave their lives fighting against slavery in the Civil War? And what about those whites who came over the turn of the century? What about blacks who are African who came here last year? Do they get paid? I mean, there's so many complications to it, and I really think it's a distraction. And what problem does it solve? Tell me what condition would be improved if reparations were paid.
Well,
that's the challenge.
Yeah, a lot of challenges that I remember seeing a headline from one writer where he said, and he was white, and he said, "Now, how much exactly do I owe Oprah Winfrey?"
No, it's true. Or Bob Johnson, or any of these. It's such a ridiculous discussion, but it really is a deflection. It reflects attention away from some of the more critical race issues, such as if racism were the big issue, then why are blacks suffering, low-income blacks suffering in cities run by their own people for the past 50 years?
No, that's so true. You know, we saw some conservative blacks running for office in different places. One was running against Maxine Waters. Another was running in Baltimore. And most of them, it seems, did not win. But I know that Burgess Owens won, and he seemed to be running on a specifically conservative platform.
Yeah, but also I just think that the biggest suppressor of black voters' apathy in some of these black-run cities, they run like banana republics. The voter turnout in Washington, D.C. among low-income black areas is 8%.
Whoa.
That's 8% of the people, and it's the same with Newark, Trenton, New Jersey. If you go to a lot of the major black cities and look at what is the voter turnout in those cities, you will find apathy is the biggest voter suppressor. And when Republicans have demonstrated a willingness to come in and engage people at the level of their needs, then they will. In 1990, Dick Reardon, who was a Republican who ran for the mayor of Los Angeles, that had not been a Republican in 35 years, yet he won. That's because 2 years prior to him running for office, he came into a low-income Hispanic community and started to work with some of the leaders there and recruited his friends and built a state-of-the-art after-school facility for the kids. And as a consequence of his investment, the community supported him when he ran. He became the first Republican in 35 years to win. And when he ran for re-election, he won almost 60% of every demographic.
Wow.
And Steve Goldsmith did the same thing 10 years later in Indianapolis, Indiana. And the question is, if these Republicans were successful, then why haven't other Republicans studied what they have done and try to reach out to them and do the same thing?
Were those gentlemen that you just referred to, were they black? Were they white? I'm just curious.
No, they were white.
They
these
were
are white Republicans.
Yeah. You know,
they were white conservatives. White conservatives. Steve Goldsmith was a prosecutor.
Yeah.
And Dick Reardon was a white businessman, but he planted charitably and he harvested politically. And when Steve Goldsmith got elected, he invested in those communities economically. He privatized public service, contracted with local black churches so that they could hire young people to maintain the parks, the public parks. He just did some innovative things to reorient the city as to assist the economic development of these distressed neighborhoods.
Well, it sounds like it went well. I mean, just like you look at what New York City was like before, Rudy Giuliani, and then what it was like after, and then you look at it today, and it's unbelievable. the life for the average black person in New York City was much better under Giuliani than it was, you know, under Dinkins. I mean, you know, one was white, one was black. It doesn't, you know, can't we get to the point where we get back to what Dr. King talked about? You know, the content of the character is what counts, not the color of the skin.
Well, there's a big divide, you know, and unfortunately, you have that a lot of these so-called black leaders today are being used as pawns by the radical left, and who have weaponized race. And so that they benefit from and using them. And as a consequence, you have this kind of disassociation going on. Polls, for instance, the defund the police is supposed to be done in the name of social justice. 80% of black people said they are against defunding the police. They want more police. 60% of blacks polled said that racial discrimination is not a principal barrier to their future. And so the question is, if this is the reality of what blacks are, then who is speaking for them?
Yeah.
You look out in California, Proposition 16 that was going to reinstate affirmative action was voted down by every major ethnic group. In liberal California, it was voted down. So where is the demand for reparations? Where is this coming from? It's certainly not expressing the will of most blacks.
Right. I mean, it should have been something that was done at the time that the war ended, the Civil War.
Exactly.
But it
That's
wasn't.
When, if you know, you're going to do it, you do it then, but not a centuries later.
Yeah. And it seems like there have been a lot of transfer payments, you know, that have benefited a lot of blacks in the last, you know, decades in America. No.
No, it benefited middle class blacks. It didn't benefit the poor. They have $22 trillion spent on poverty programs the last 50 years, and poverty has not gone down in that whole period of time. But middle class providers of service to the poor, they have prospered. Their kids go on to school. They live in safe neighborhoods. So the biggest divide today isn't based upon race, it's based on class.
You know, let me ask you this. I understand that the Black Lives Matter, the organization, scrubbed from their website statements against the nuclear family, but the fact that they had them there in the first place, it seems to me that the family is kind of the key to everything. Good family, potential for upward mobility. Bad family situation, and, you know, a lot of kids might just languish in poverty.
Well, that's true. And even though Black Lives Matter may have taken it down, they still believe it. They still adhere to it. The fact is that they, after George Floyd demonstrations who turned into riots, they then migrated from seeking justice for blacks to denigrating the Christian cross as being a symbol of white supremacy. They also burned Bibles on the streets of Portland, Oregon.
Yeah.
And they also tore down Frederick Douglass's statue.
Yeah.
So you got to understand that, again, race is only, they're using, they don't care about black folks or having justice for black folks. They're just using it to denigrate the values and foundational principles of this nation.
Yeah, we're both, you and I, and we've had previous discussions about American history. We're both interested in history. One thing I don't understand is that in previous generations, Booker T. Washington who wrote this magnificent book, one of the most motivational books. In fact, I need to reread it. It's such an uplifting book, Up from Slavery. He was a great hero. He was the first black, as I understand it, that got to visit in the White House under Teddy Roosevelt. He got to visit and speak at Harvard, first black to do so, and so forth. So in previous times, he was a hero, and he's certainly a Christian. He started the Tuskegee Institute and so forth. But, you know, in the last 50, 60 years, he's somehow denigrated among, you know, Al Sharpton types. And I don't get it. What's wrong with Booker T. Washington?
He's denigrated. Well, because Al Sharpton and others, they have caved and they have become puppets of white conservatives, of liberals. They have become servants of them. You know,
that's the problem. What are your thoughts on Booker T. Washington and you know the?
Oh, he's a hero. Booker T. Washington is founder of Booker T. Washington and Julius Rosenwald together built 5,000 Rosenwald Booker T. schools in the South. As a consequence, the blacks were able to close the education gap between 1920 and 1940 from 3 years to 6 months. And so the question is, if when whites were at their worst, blacks were at their best, if we were able to close the education gap under segregation, then why can't we do it today with blacks running the school systems that they do? But as long as we're talking about reparations, we don't have to answer those very troubling questions.
So if you were, let's say, called in to be an advisor for somebody that says, look, Bob, here's the overall goal. The overall goal is to lift these blacks that are in perpetual poverty and give them a better future, a better hope. How would you advise it? You've got about 2 minutes left or 3 minutes left. Go ahead.
What I would do is go in and find out, if you say that 70% of the families are dysfunctional and the children are not, that means 30% are. Go in and find out what is happening in the 30% of the households where the children are living in poverty but not of poverty, to find out how are those parents being successful. Support what they're doing in the 30% so that they can learn, teach the 70%.
Okay, so one goal would be to strengthen the family. Wouldn't it be fair to say...
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say that a lot of the transfer payments, you mentioned the $22 trillion spent, you know, like the welfare system and so forth. A lot of times what that would do is basically it would subsidize illegitimacy. So there was almost like a financial incentive to being a single parent.
You got to reduce those, but also you got to invest in people whose goal is self-sufficiency and small business development. We got to look at the strengths of it. Can we find out? Well, where are there sources of inspirational leadership in these communities? You know, I can take you to whole communities where they're low-income families and they're prospering and starting small businesses and all. In other words, you need to emphasize strengths. Find out what is going on in the households in these low-income neighborhoods that are not on welfare and the children are not dropping out of school or on drugs, to find out what is going on that's positively affecting people in those houses. But we don't have no one studies the capacity or strengths of low income communities. We only study the pathology.
Mm. Okay, half a minute left. I like the point you made in a recent interview where you said, it's so wrong to judge America as being systematically racist in its very DNA, in its birth, because nobody should be judged by the worst thing that they used to do. Can you comment on that? And just we'll close on that point.
Yes. Slavery is America's birth defect, but no one should be defined by what we used to be. How many of your listeners would want to be defined by the worst things they did as a young person? None of us would. Because we want to be defined by the promise. We want to be defined where what we've evolved. And America should be judged upon what it has become, a beacon of hope from people throughout the world. That's why people of color are coming from risking their lives from all over the world to get here, because they want to take advantage of the promise that America offers.
And your website is woodsoncenter.org, is that right?
WoodsonCenter.org and 1776unites.com.
Okay, thank you so much, sir. Always a pleasure.
All right, thank you.
Sure, bye-bye.